Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, our mission is really unpacking a fiercely written, just highly intense theological polemic.
Oh, intense is definitely the word for it.
Right. It was published on June 28, 2026, by a writer named Chen Shaloff. And the immediate target of this essay is a YouTube creator named Daniel Asor.
Yeah, but it doesn't stay focused on just him for long.
No, not at all. What starts as a sharp internet call out really quickly explodes into this massive, I mean, centuries-old debate.
Exactly.
We're looking at a battle over the very nature of God, the strict definition of monotheism, and the really controversial role of Kabbalah, or Jewish mysticism.
But, you know, before we map the nuts and bolts of this text, we really need to lay down a firm baseline for you, our listener.
Definitely. A mandatory disclaimer here.
Right. The source document we're analyzing today contains highly charged religious and ideological content. And it uses very uncompromising, aggressive language to make its points.
It really does.
So we want to be clear that we are strictly impartial here. We're taking absolutely no sides. We are not endorsing the author's viewpoints, and we're not attacking anyone.
Yeah. Our sole objective is just to act as your guides, to help you understand the fascinating and frankly, intense ideas contained within this specific original source document.
Right. We're just analyzing the text.
Okay, so let's jump right in. Imagine you leave a religion because you think its concept of God is just too complicated, only to be accused later of joining a system that makes God even more complicated. I mean, how do we define the word one? That's the hook here.
It is. And the trigger for all of this, the reason this text was even written, is a video that Daniel Asor released on June 24th, 2026.
Right. He had been silent for a while, right?
Yeah, a long silence. And then he posts this video warning his audience against the dangers of idolatry.
Which Shaloff sees and just absolutely pounces on.
Oh, he calls it a monumental display of hypocrisy. Because, you know, Asor's theological background is really specific.
Right. He's a former Christian who converted to Judaism.
Exactly. And Shaloff points out that Asor left Christianity specifically because he rejected the Trinity. He couldn't reconcile God as three distinct entities with pure monotheism.
So he walks away looking for absolute, simple unity.
Yeah. But Shaloff's blistering critique is that instead of finding that simple unity, Asor embraced this specific brand of Kabbalah.
Lurianic Kabbalah, right. Based on the Zohar and Rabbi Chaim Vital.
Right. And Shaloff argues that Asor just traded a system of three for a system of ten, the ten Sephirot.
So it's kind of like, and I love this analogy, it's like someone quitting a sugar-heavy diet by switching from a three-layer cake to a ten-layer pastry.
That is exactly how Shaloff sees it.
But then claiming, oh, I'm eating healthy now. It's just wild. But, I mean, why is the author so angry? Isn't Kabbalah widely studied? What makes it a ten-layer pastry to him?
Well, to Shaloff, this isn't just a polite academic difference of opinion. He genuinely sees this as the boundary line between true monotheism and dangerous disguised paganism.
Wow. Disguised paganism. That's a heavy accusation.
It is. And it all comes down to the fundamental debate about what one God actually means. And to understand Shaloff's anger, you have to look at his philosophical bedrock, which is entirely Maimonides.
The Rambam.
Exactly. For Maimonides, God's oneness is absolute. It's simple, uncompounded.
Meaning no parts whatsoever.
Right. No divisions, no physical form, no emotional fluctuations.
Yeah.
Just absolutely one.
And the source text actually gives us this brilliant, really concrete analogy right in the text to explain this. The orange analogy.
Oh, I love the orange analogy. It breaks it down so well.
Right. So think of an orange. You go to the market, you buy an orange, you hold it up and call it one orange.
Right.
But inside it's made up of many segments, right? You've got the peel, the pith, the juice. If you take away a segment, it's incomplete. Its oneness relies entirely on all those parts sticking together.
And Shaloff argues that God is absolutely categorically not an orange.
Right.
Because if God is made up of segments, like a little bit of mercy, plus some justice, plus an emanation of wisdom, then God is dependent on those attributes to exist.
And dependency means you lack something.
Exactly. And an infinite perfect being cannot lack anything. God simply is. No segments.
But then Shaloff looks at the Kabbalistic system and says it does exactly that. It breaks God down.
Yeah, he points right at the Sephirot, the emanations, and the Partsufim, which are like faces or configurations.
Right. He uses these specific terms that he clearly despises, like Zir Ampin, the short face, and Nukva, the female aspect.
He looks at that framework and literally sees a pantheon. He's accusing them of giving God a family tree and gender dynamics.
He even goes after the famous books. He takes Chaim Vital's famous book, Etz Haim, the Tree of Life, and renames it.
Yeah, he calls it Etz Mavet, the tree of death.
Which is just a brutal insult in this context. He claims it promotes this divided polytheistic view.
He really pulls no punches.
But wait, a defender of Kabbalah would probably say, look, these aren't literal physical parts. They're just spiritual lights or metaphors.
Oh, they do say that all the time.
So if it's just a metaphor, what's the real harm here? Why is Shalhoub so worked up?
Because of how these beliefs impact real-world human behavior. And this is Shalhoub's sharpest theological argument, the problem of theurgy.
Theurgy. That's the idea that humans can influence the divine, right?
Exactly. Shalhoub argues that if God has parts, and if those parts interact like male and female aspects separating or uniting, then this system claims human actions down on Earth can actually influence those divine parts.
Which means it's not just a metaphor anymore.
Right. If you can manipulate it, it's literal mechanics.
And the text gives us these incredibly concrete examples that are just fascinating, like placing ashes on your head.
Yes, the ash ritual.
Shalhoub cites this practice where putting ashes on a specific spot on your head is supposed to cause a literal heating up or desire in the divine realm.
Right, to trigger a mating or union between those upper male and female aspects.
And there's another one too, the Chahamod example.
Oh, the tefillin. Yeah, that's a perfect example of this mechanical view.
Right. So on certain intermediate festival days, people don't lay tefillin, the phylacteries. And Shalhoub notes that the mystical reason given isn't just historical. It's because it might disrupt an upper spiritual signal.
Like invisible spiritual plumbing. You put the leather straps on a Tuesday and it jams the divine frequency.
Wow. And that just horrifies Shalhoub.
It absolutely horrifies him because, let's go back to Maimonides. God is perfect. God lacks nothing.
Right.
So if a human being can repair God, which is this concept known as tikkun, or if God actually needs a human to do an ash ritual to achieve balance,
then God is fundamentally flawed.
Exactly. Flawed, dependent, and changing. And to Shalhoub, that is the ultimate heresy.
It elevates the human to like a cosmic mechanic.
Yes, and reduces God to a machine that breaks down and needs maintenance.
So by trying to feel closer to God through these mystical rituals, Shalhoub says they've actually just created this massive barrier of middlemen and forces.
A dense thicket of bureaucracy.
But it makes you wonder, where do the Kabbalists even get the idea that God has these human-like qualities in the first place?
Well, it all comes down to how you read a single line in Genesis, the ultimate textual battleground.
In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them.
That's the verse. And Kabbalists, like Vital, look at that and use a principle of mirroring.
Meaning, if humans are male and female,
then there must be a parallel dynamic, a male and female structure up in the divine realm.
But Shalhoub completely rejects that.
Vehemently. He quotes Abraham ben Maimonides to tear that idea apart.
Who is Maimonides' son, right?
Right. And he argues that image does not refer to physical anatomy or gender. It refers to human intellect.
Our capacity for rational thought.
Exactly. So to take human biology and project it onto God is, to Shalhoub, the height of foolishness and gross misinterpretation.
But, I mean, let's push back on Shalhoub for a second. He is arguing against centuries of accepted tradition here.
Centuries and massive famous texts.
So how does he justify just tossing out the Zohar? How does one guy say everyone's been wrong for 500 years?
He actually uses Maimonides again to explain this. He cites the Rambam's warning about the psychology of beliefs.
The authority of books.
Right. People have this fatal cognitive flaw. If a book is old and it's highly complex and a lot of scholars have debated it for centuries, we automatically assume it must be true.
Did the scribes write for nothing, as the quote Shalhoub brings up, right?
Yeah. People say, look at all this effort. It must mean something. And Shalhoub warns you, the listener, directly. Do not fall for this trap.
Just because it's in an old text doesn't make it sacred.
Exactly. It can still be entirely false. The complexity is often just a shield against criticism.
And he takes this to a really extreme conclusion. He doesn't just say, hey, maybe read these critically.
Oh, no. He goes nuclear.
He cites these ancient laws stating that heretical books written by people who abandoned pure monotheism shouldn't even be saved from a fire on the Sabbath.
Right, which is huge in a tradition that normally treats texts with absolute reverence.
And he asserts they should be actively burned and that you shouldn't even derive warmth from their ashes.
It shows an absolute zero tolerance policy. He sees these ideas not just as misguided, but as a fatal poison to the religion.
Which really brings this deep dive back to you, our listener, and your everyday life.
Yeah, because even if you aren't debating medieval theology, this applies to so much today.
Exactly. Shalov's warning about the authority of the written word is incredibly relevant. I mean, think about it. How often do we accept a really complex system or a dense news article or an expert framework simply because it's published?
Right, because it sounds sophisticated or uses big jargon.
Yeah, even if it contradicts basic logic, we just assume the experts must know what they're doing.
So to sum it all up, Shalov's text is really a passionate defense of keeping the main thing the main thing.
Simple monotheism.
Exactly. It's a fight to protect the concept of absolute, simple unity from being bogged down by complex, mystical bureaucracy.
And it leaves us with something really provocative to ponder. When we try to describe something infinite and perfect like God, or even abstract concepts like absolute truth or perfect justice, we have to use human language.
We have no other tool.
But the moment we use human words, we limit and divide that concept because words define boundaries.
They inherently chop things up.
Right. So is it even mechanically possible to talk about the infinite without accidentally breaking it into pieces?
How do you talk about one when language forces you to count?
Exactly. Something to think about the next time you try to put the indescribable into words.